Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
From the land of Grand Teton University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 15th day of July, 2015. I'm Todd Gleason. Happy birthday to my twins, Megan and Jared, on their 21st. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vake. She's at Stuart Peterson from right here in Champaign County, Illinois. We'll discuss the weather forecast with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. The folks at the Anderson's Climbers Facility out of Logansport, Indiana, will give us the lowdown on condition and basis in their area. And we'll hear a bit about feed wheat and how not to use it in southern Illinois, or more likely, when not to use it in southern Illinois for beef cattle. Travis Mateer will join us during this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
At the CME Group in Chicago, futures finished the day mixed. Nearby September corn was a penny and a quarter higher. Remember, the July contracts expired yesterday afternoon. December futures at 440 and a quarter, up 1.5, and the March up a penny and a half as well at 450 and a half. July up 1, that at 458 and a half. The September of next year down 3.75 at $4.35. December 2016 unchanged at $4.36 and 3/4 in the corn pit. August soybeans at $10.25 or 8.5 cents lower on the day. September down 9 at $10.16 and a quarter. November 9 cents lower at $10.16 even. January 10.22 and a quarter down 9. The March 8.5 lower at $10.17 and a half. And July of next year at $10.08 and 3/4 down 7. The November 2016 contract down 9.5 at $9.61 and a quarter in the soybean pit. Bean meal up $5 at $3.62.20 in the August. Bean oil in the lead option at 31.65. That's the August contract, down 75 cents. Soft red winter wheat at $5.66 and 3/4 of a cent, finished 4 1/4 lower in the September. The hard red at $5.59, down 2 1/4. The July 16, by the way, in the soft red, up 3 cents at $5.85 and 3/4 of a cent. Live cattle futures in Chicago for the August at 12.5 cents lower, $147.25 the current trade. August feeder cattle 85 cents higher at $2.15.15. And the lean hogs in the July contract at $80.45, up 52.5 cents. You're listening to Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, offering financial products and services specifically for the agricultural industry, including farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing, as well as farm cash management solutions.
Checking now the outside markets. In the crude oil, futures are trading $1.77 lower at $51.27 a barrel. Ethanol down 2.5 cents at $1.58 per gallon. Gasoline on the wholesale price 7 6/10 of a cent lower at $1.85 and 4 cents. And heating oil or diesel fuel is down 0.5 cents at $1.66 and 6 cents of a cent. Natural gas for the day at 7 4/10 of a cent higher, $2.91 and 4 cents of a cent. The Dow Jones Industrial Average stands at 17,937, just about 24 points lower. The U.S. dollar at 97.295 is up 0.516, and the gold futures on the day are currently trading the nearby contract at $1,146.50. That's $7 lower on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon. Mostly sunny skies, a high of a beautiful 80 degrees. Northeast winds at around 7 miles an hour. Tonight, partly cloudy, a low of 61. And then Thursday, a 20% chance of showers and thunderstorms after 1. Partly sunny otherwise, a high of just 83 degrees. And Thursday evening, a 30% chance of rainfall after 1 a.m., mostly cloudy otherwise, and a low of 70 degrees. And on Friday, partly sunny skies and 89. Saturday, sunny and 90. Sunday, mostly sunny and 91. And Monday, a chance of showers, thunderstorms, otherwise partly sunny and a high of 85 degrees. And on Monday night, cloudy and 67. We'll take a more complete look at the weather forecast at the bottom of this half hour.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.
It is the 15th day of July. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I. Joining us from Stuart Peterson this afternoon is Jackie Vink. She's located in Champaign County. Thanks so much, Jackie, for being with us this afternoon. I do appreciate you taking the time. I'd like to know what you've been watching, especially over the last couple of days as the weather has changed and so have the markets.
Well, there's no question about that. I think, this is a situation when you're in a primarily weather-driven market and not much of anything else, and they're ignoring everything. You see the ebbs and the flows, and basically today on the bean market, we saw some of the profit flow back out of it. If you've been watching the grain markets, you basically have seen money come out of the livestock market, go into the grain markets, come back out, go back out. And today was kind of a mixed-up day because live cattle were negative today. Corn was positive. Feeder cattle were positive, and beans were negative. So I don't know if they really correlate together that much. But, you know, it's all about money flow. It's all about black boxes and this algorithmic trading, monitoring Twitter and looking at how often corn is talked about, how often beans are talked about. And today it just didn't look like they had the, those guys buying nearly as much as they've been doing. And I would imagine that has died down because the weather forecast does look a little bit better.
Within the last hour or so, one of our listeners, who has been an avid listener, I think probably for quite a while, asked me a question to ask you. He remembered, or she did, that in 2012, you mentioned weather rallies last about 6 weeks. He wants to know what you think of that thought today.
Well, you know, if you look back, I can give you individual years, and I like to take them out and kind of look at comparable years. In 83, we rallied 6 weeks. 88, it was 8 weeks, which was a drought year. 93, 4 weeks. 95, 3 weeks. 2010, which is a wet year, we rallied 4 weeks, set back, and then rallied 10 weeks up to September 24th, and then we gapped higher when the October USDA report came out, and then it exhausted itself. In 2012, we rallied 8 weeks, again, a drought year, just like 1988. And so, you know, for 15 right now, we're in our fourth week of the rally. Now, you know, and we're having a little bit of a, you know, kind of a consolidation thing going on here. So can we confidently say that this is going to be like that 2010? I think the reason you see bigger and longer weather rallies in a wet year is because, you know, in a dry year, you pretty much got a good idea what's going to produce and what's not going to produce. And in a wet year, you don't have a clue, you know, unless. So I took it, and rather than leave it just on a so many weeks it does it, I wanted to really look at what was the difference between the exchange rate in 2010 and what it is in 2015. So in 10 we rallied. When we finally finished rallying, we went all the way to from 350 to 605. But we were in a year when the dollar was actually going down. Okay, so we rallied $2.55 in futures, but it had a net impact of $1.56 on the exporter in general. I didn't go and do the individual export people. I just figured out in general. And on, so far in 2015, we've rallied from 362.5 to 454.25. If you look at that, we're in a rising dollar situation. So we've only rallied the futures 92 cents, but we've already raised the price to the exporter $1.03. So there is a distinct difference between those years. You know, so to be able to say, well, because we're just like 2010, perhaps we're going to continue this rally is very difficult. And I think this bears or brings a lot of credibility to what a lot of us have been talking about, and is that corn exports could really go down the toilet. I mean, they could drop all the way to probably below $1.7 billion, and they're currently expected to be at $1.865. So, we have to be careful about how excited we get about all of the perception that's going on in the market. None of us want to miss out on anything, but boy, oh boy, I'll tell you what, it's a different world.
A different world, but one you can keep track of. Have you been watching what the Federal Reserve has been up to?
Oh, have I? Well, let's just tie all kinds of things into what the Federal Reserve has been up to. I think it's interesting how empowered they get the minute it looks like there's going to be a grease deal, and the minute that the economy in China looks like it is okay. Yellen was speaking today. She said the federal path is to raise rates in 2015. These are the concerns: high U.S. debt, weak property values, the China economy, Greece, and higher dollar. We have the IMF asking them, please do not raise rates because we've got all kinds of problems, and they're still arguing about accountability and transparency. So it's there's the only thing that it comes down to, the bottom line is, Janet Yellen says, we are going to get an interest rate raise in 2015 unless something major changes. You know, with the Greece situation, it's really a mess is what it is, and it's been a mess. I mean, the leftist party now is really bucking the new pensions and the tax reforms that they need in order to get the money, but they need 7 billion euros by this weekend. So now the EU is saying, well, maybe we'll give it to them out of an emergency fund because it's going to take us 3 to 4 weeks to really craft something. And I, you know, I got to ask myself, they currently owe 330 billion euros to the EU, and now they're asking for another 86 billion in loans with better repayment plans. I don't know. I never ever had a bank or a card that I could argue with about my payment plan, but I guess I didn't owe them enough. So, you know, just how much more risk are creditors willing to take is my question. And if Greece leaving the EU would not hurt, why are they taking all the dramatic measures to help them? You know, those are the questions we have to ask ourselves, and that's another thing that we have to be prepared for, because it would impact us. There's no question about that. It will have impact in the U.S. and on U.S. banks, and more than anything, on perception.
The Iran deal. What do you think there?
What's that?
The Iran deal. What do you think there?
The Iran deal. Well, I tell you what. I saw a headline yesterday that I thought that was really good. It said, the Democratic Party is very skeptical, and the Republicans are hostile. And I can understand, if you really look at it, what we're doing is, with this deal, they're lifting billions of dollars in sanctions off of Iran. And what they're going to do is they're going to allow them to come back in and start to ship oil to us. And, you know, that means that crude oil prices, I would guess, are probably going to go sub 50. And in the long run, you know, that's not a bad thing for the world economy in that respect. But the trade-off is pretty strange. So we'll see once how it all plays out. But I do think ultimately, you know, they're going to put, what they say, about 1 million more barrels of oil onto the market when this is actually lifted. And so, you know, and you go there for, you know, you go, okay, let's jump to Iran, and now let's go to China. You know, their GDP came out today at 7%. Woo, that was good. You know, 2007, they were at 14.2%. But their stock market still fell 3%, like we talked about this morning. And I picked up a really good article out of the New Yorker. It was called The Real Risk Behind China's Stock Market Drama. And on April 21st, they came out and they said to the people with an online commentary, place your trust and savings in the stock market. Share prices were already up 80% in less than 4 months at that point in time. So they said, this is merely the start of the bull market. Blue chips are undervalued. Sounds like 2008 to me. Day after commentary, shares surged to the highest point in 7 years. So why would they believe them is the question I kept asking myself. And that's why I like this article, because they addressed that. They said official announcements carry the ring of a prophecy in China. In the heyday, the Communist Party predicted the size of the harvest and of the steel production, and then they controlled the numbers to make sure that they came out very close to that. So the people truly believe that they have that ability. And the worst part is that the banks gave people loans, you know, the individuals loans to buy stocks, Todd. Honestly, kind of sounds like our housing thing. So over the next 2.5 months, those investors opened 38 million stock accounts, quadrupled the number opened in 14. And they said very few of them have high school educations. So by June of this year, we were more than 11%, or 49 million of their 443 million households held stocks. Well, on the 13th of June, they began to fall, and they wiped out trillions in paper earnings. So, you know, just to give the listeners an idea here of how much that is, when they fell, they erased the combined value of France and Spain's stock exchange. And then they lurched back the next day, and they gained more than what the Russian stock exchange is worth. So it kind of puts a picture in my mind of how important and how serious this can be.
Of course, that's Jackie Vick. She's with Stuart Peterson from right here in Champaign County. Joins us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. In today's agricultural news, the deal with Iran could impact the U.S. energy sector. The deal negotiators struck, ending the standoff with Iran over its nuclear ambitions, will loosen sanctions on Iranian oil exports. And that's not great news for the U.S. oil and gas industry, says University of Texas energy analyst Tom Tunstall. He says it will force drillers to be more efficient.
A $100 barrel of oil covers a multitude of sins. You know, it's really forcing the exploration production companies to look at logistics, production technique.
And Tunstall says it especially puts pressure on the fracking industry to get more efficient.
Unconventional techniques are still new enough to where there's a lot of efficiencies yet to be squeezed out of the system.
And for that reason, he thinks the oil and gas industry will continue to be prosperous. Well, this note comes from Missouri, which is asking the United States Department of Agriculture to extend acreage report deadlines. Missouri Governor Jim Nixon has sent a letter to USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack requesting an extension of the period for producers to submit their acreage reports to the USDA Risk Management Agency, or RMA. Governor Nixon sent the request following heavy rainfall and flooding that delayed many farmers' ability to plant their crops in his state. Missouri has been at the forefront of the discussion when it comes, of course, to planting delays this year, with 20% of the soybean crop left unplanted as of this week's crop progress report by USDA. Speaking of Washington, D.C., as we reported yesterday, the House Ag Committee endorsed a voluntary labeling system for genetically engineered foods, a move that would block states from individually requiring such labels. Some still argued for mandatory GMO labeling, but the Ag Committee passed on a voice vote the bill to create uniform national voluntary labeling similar to the Agricultural Marketing Service's existing organic labeling program. House Ag Chair Mike Conaway.
In testimony for this committee, multiple representatives of the food and agricultural sectors commented on the cost burden that would be placed on our food system if we were to allow 50 states, more than 3,000 counties, and nearly 20,000 towns and cities in the United States to establish their own laws regulating interstate commerce.
And Conaway argues voluntary GMO labeling would prevent interference in interstate commerce when individual states like Vermont pass their own GMO labeling requirements. Top House Agriculture Democrat Colin Peterson says the bill serves a dual purpose.
Consumers increasingly want to know more about where their food comes from and how it is produced. I think H.R. 1599 satisfies that demand while also recognizing what we know about the safety of the foods and that our farmers produce.
And Biotech Subcommittee Chair Rodney Davis of Illinois pointed to the success of the existing National Organic Labeling Program.
This bill mimics that structure and gives consumers the information they need to be more educated about the labels they read and food that they purchase. Most importantly, this bill creates one standard for products claiming to be non-genetically engineered or genetically engineered, as opposed to multiple labels with different criteria.
American Farm Bureau President Bob Stallman, who just announced, by the way, that he'll be stepping down from his post at the helm of AFBF in January after 16 years, praised the Ag Panel bill that he says does away with labeling schemes that would stigmatize GMO foods. A similar bill is being put together in the Senate. And finally today, the House Agriculture Committee has held a hearing to recognize the continuing contributions of the 1890 land-grant universities on the 125th anniversary of the passage of the Second Morrill Act of 1890. As a network of historically black colleges and universities dedicated to providing educational opportunity for all through innovative scientific research and community-minded extension programs, the 1890 land-grant universities have a long history of successes and contributions in agricultural higher education. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Up next, we'll talk with Travis Mateer, University of Illinois Extension beef cattle specialist, about feed wheat and how producers should be careful with it and potentially the straw that comes from those same fields. In the southern part of Illinois, and I would suspect in Missouri and parts of Indiana and other places where they grow soft red winter wheat, and they've been harvesting, they've had some serious vomitoxin problems. This has made that wheat not suitable for human consumption. However, it can be used for livestock feed and for beef in particular. What kinds of problems do you foresee with producers who are feeding feed-grade wheat?
I think, Todd, the first thing we need to do is make sure that we store that grain appropriately. What I mean by that is we get that grain quickly dried down and stop the growth of that mycotoxin at higher moisture levels, probably over 18%. That problem can actually proliferate. So recommend that producers go ahead and get that grain harvested, get it dried down, and stop any future problems once they get that grain in storage from occurring. Then from there, if they choose to use that wheat as feed, have to be aware of what level of vomitoxin may occur. So having a chemical test done on a sample, a representative sample of your grain to understand what level of infection there may be. That'll be key to understanding how much you can put in the ration and what blend you may need to prepare before you feed those grains. So the FDA puts out those recommended levels, and in cattle, let's say it's 10 parts per million if we're feeding 50% of the ration as grain, and 5 parts per million would be the limit for that total ration. So those are key numbers to pay attention to, and the data that those numbers are based off of is primarily on feed refusals. So there may need to be aware that some subtle effects on animal health and performance could potentially happen if before those levels. But at that point, we have reduced feed intake where the animal is refusing some of that feed, and obviously will have negative performance effects at that point.
So it sounds to me as if there are two things happening there. There's a regulatory function from FDA, but also that the animal simply may not eat as much feed wheat if it is, well, let's call it off taste because of the vomitoxin.
Well, that's right. I mean, it does have to do with intake, and different grains have different levels that the FDA draws the threshold line on. So I think it's important that you consult with your local extension specialist or your nutritionist to make sure that your ration is safe for the animals and won't limit performance or compromise health.
Any other items we should be aware of?
Well, I think straw is an interesting component here. There could be some mycotoxin levels in the straw, but generally if we're just using the straw for bedding, it's a lot lower risk. But if we do choose to feed that straw in a TMR, have to be aware of that as well, and maybe include that. As I mentioned earlier, it does impact the total ration in terms of what level may be usable for feed.
That's Travis Mateer from the University of Illinois. He's a beef cattle specialist. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It does come to you from Illinois Public Media. Find us online at WILLAG.org.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, lending support to generations of farm families. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit Illinois offers financial products and services geared specifically to the agricultural community.
Let's check the cash grain market at this hour. We're joined by Alex Reed from the Anderson's Climbers facility near Logansport, Indiana. It's the ethanol plant. Thanks so much to Alex for being with us. I appreciate it. You've had really strong basis levels in part, I think, because you were hunting a little bit for a smaller corn crop than much of the rest of the country from last year, and you're looking for not that great a corn crop this year. Tell me about conditions, please.
Yeah, absolutely. That's kind of been the story here recently because we just continue to get rain. Northwest Indiana is looking really rough this year. So trying to build inventories most of the place for old crop, but a lot of producers are very hesitant to let go of it. Despite the rally that we've had in the market and despite basis getting stronger, it's just guys don't want to let go of old crop when their new crop looks as poor as it does in some circumstances.
Tell me about basis for corn, both old and new crop.
Right now we're posted option price for old crop, and new crop come this fall, most people are posted about 20, 25 under. We have actually improved to 15 under here last week, and it certainly feels that it could improve even more. We still have a little bit of the summer left, but you know, we won't know the final numbers until everybody gets out there, but it could continue to get better this fall, and rail values are pushing us, you know, even higher possibly. So.
And finally, what are your bids for the day?
Right now we are cash corn at 429 and cash beans we would be 1026.
Thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
That, of course, is Alex Reed. He is with the Andersons Climbers Facility, joins us on this Wednesday afternoon. This is the Closing Market Report on a Wednesday afternoon from Illinois Public Media for the 15th day of July. Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated is here to look at the forecast for the Midwest. It turned better, and things in Chicago over the last day and a half or so turned down. I suppose part of that is because there was less rainfall in the 6 to 10 day and even further out. What can you tell me about amounts that you see across the Midwest?
Well, indeed, I think we are at the cusp of change here, seeing a lot less precipitation occur across parts of the lower Midwest, and that is certainly long overdue, as you know. And I think everybody is ready for the change, and the market is, of course, poised at this point to recognize that a lot of these crops, that not the ones that are still standing in the water, but the ones that have just been too wet, will likely respond very quickly to 80 and lower 90-degree high temperatures as we move forward through the next 5 to 7 days. And that will stimulate a quick turnaround for some of these crops. All the light green color that we see out there in some of these wetter areas will disappear over a few days' time, and we'll see the more lush conditions returning to the crops. Of course, it's pretty late, and the crop is going to have to be pushed into pollination fairly quickly here, so it's not going to be a full recovery by any means. But certainly we'll see the overall look of the crop change greatly as we go through this somewhat drier and a warmer period of time.
And if you look further out, you suggested that this might be a change. Are we moving through a real change where the rainfall, I don't know about shut off, but at least won't come nearly so often for a longer period of time?
Yeah, I think that's a very good statement to make. I don't think that we are going to see the persistent day after day of rain type pattern that we've had around. You know, if it hadn't been for Tropical Storm Bill, I think a lot of this wouldn't have been quite the issue that it's been. But we got behind the eight ball with that storm, and we just couldn't handle the rains that came after that. But we don't see anything like that coming along for a while now, and certainly our temperatures are going to be more consistently on the warm side, so we should see good drying conditions between rain events. So I don't think we'll go back to where we've been, but we do have to wait and see how much damage we've actually done to this crop.
Other areas in the northern hemisphere you've been watching?
Yes, we're still watching France, of all places. They have a fair-sized corn crop, as well as wheat and rapeseed are all produced there. They've had quite a bout of dry weather this month. In fact, it started in late June. The crops there are suffering a bit from the lack of moisture, and there is a need for widespread rain. It's getting pretty late for a lot of the crops. The rapeseed crop is pretty much done. But corn, they irrigate about 56% of that corn crop, so it leaves a fair amount of it that is still vulnerable to the dryness. Outside of that, we're watching India's monsoon. All the hype with El Nino this year suggesting a terrible year for India's rainfall has turned out to be almost opposite of what's occurred so far. The weather's been well-timed there. There's been some drying in the west here recently, but there's going to be some timely rain coming up next week that'll fix that problem, and India may still come off with a fairly good-sized crop this year.
Hey, thanks so much for taking the time with us today, Drew.
You bet. Have a good day.
You too. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City, and that wraps up this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason.